And I shall seem to him to be a deceiver, and I shall bring a curse on myself and not a blessing. And his mother said to him, on me be thy curse, my son. It'll come on me, not on you. She pronounced a curse on herself. Later on in the chapter, she said to her husband, Isaac, she complained about the wives that Esau had married, who were the daughters of Heth, and she didn't approve of them. Actually, they have a saying amongst the Jewish people, I don't know whether you've ever heard it, about a Yiddish mama, a Jewish mother, who basically seeks to determine the whole course of her family, her children, everything. There's a story about one that was in a theater, and she said, is there a doctor in the house? And this man stood up and she said, boy, do I have a daughter for you. If you've never met the type, but they're not only found amongst Jewish people, they're found amongst all races. The mother who runs everybody, plans everybody's life, determines whom everybody should marry. Well, Rebecca really wasn't getting things the way she wanted them. And she said this to Isaac in verse 46. I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob takes a wife of the daughters of Heth, like these who are the daughters of the land, what good will my life do to me? You see, she pronounced a double curse on herself. She said, I'm weary of my life. What's the good of living? I might as well die. And I cannot tell you how many people we've dealt with who've pronounced a curse on themselves by saying, I wish I were dead. What's the good of living? I'm not going to make it. You don't have to say that very often. It's like an invitation to the spirit of death. And you don't have to give many invitations. He'll come in. We've seen scores of people delivered from the spirit of death. In one meeting in Northern Ireland in November last year, I prayed collectively for the people that needed deliverance from the spirit of death in an audience of about 2,000 people, and about 50 people received simultaneous deliverance, and most of them were young people. How does it come in? This attitude of hopelessness. No good living. What's got life got to offer to me? I might as well be dead. Brothers and sisters, it's a terribly dangerous thing to say. You're really pronouncing a curse on yourself. And you know how busy the devil is to trick you into saying that? You sometimes say it for very inadequate reasons, in a fit of pique or discouragement, but you're settling your own destiny. One other tragic example from the New Testament, familiar I'm sure to most of us, Matthew 27. Matthew 27, verses 24 and 25. The scene of the trial of Jesus by Pontius Pilate. Verse 24. When Pilate saw that he could not prevail at all, but rather that a tumult was rising, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. You see to it. And all the people answered and said, his blood be on us and on our children. What's that? It's a self-imposed curse. And you really cannot understand the history of the Jewish people over the last 19 centuries until you see that one major factor in it is a self-imposed curse that goes on from generation to generation to generation. His blood be upon us and our children, where the word children in that context means our succeeding generation. It's tragic. It's terrible. The next source of curses is men representing Satan. Witch doctors. Now, don't laugh at me, but I think I know what it is in Maori. Tohunga, is that right? Yeah, well, it's every language has that word, believe me. And they are experts at cursing. That's their profession. And they're very skillful. They know how to do it. In East Africa, when I was principal of a college for training African teachers, one of my students from a certain remote mountain area told me this story. He said, in his village, two families quarreled. And one family went to the witch doctor, paid him a kid, a goat, and said, put a hex on the other family. And the witch doctor said, all right. At midnight on a certain night, a jackal will cry in the village, and the son of that family will die. And at midnight on that night, a jackal cried, and the son died. If he didn't die of anything, he died of sheer fright. You understand? Ruth and I were in Zambia last year, and one of the ministries that we have is praying for barren women who can't have children. And so out of this large crowd of about 7,000 people, we called for women in that condition. About 400 women came forward for prayer. And before we prayed for them, we asked the interpreter to ask them how many of them had been to a witch doctor to get a potion to enable them to have children. And there were only two that didn't raise their hands out of 400. See, if you know parts of Africa, they are totally dominated by witch doctors. Everything in their lives is controlled by the unseen spiritual power of witch doctors. When we came with this message there about the release from the curse, it was one of the most dramatic changes I've ever seen in people. After they had listened to my teaching and said the prayer after me, those people were visibly transformed. Up to that time, you hardly saw them smile. From then on, they were some of the happiest people I've ever seen. The change was like from night to day. And one well-dressed man, obviously a well-to-do man, when I walked down from the platform, he came up and rubbed himself in the dust, which is their way of expressing appreciation and honor. And he said through the interpreter, I've been a wretched man all my life. I've been in continual pain for years. He said, now I'm free, I have no more pain, and I'm happy. And his face was radiant. And the only thing that had happened was we'd released him from the curse. See, we've become so civilized in some places that we've lost touch with some things that are very real. But they're still real, even if we don't believe in them. You can say you don't believe in viruses, but if you get one, you'll get sick. The example, we don't need to go into it in detail, in the Bible is Balaam, the witch doctor. The king of Moab knew he couldn't defeat Israel in war, so he hired Balaam and said, come and pronounce a curse on them. Because I know the one you is cursed and the one you bless is blessed. That's typical. Most African tribes, before they go into battle, they'll get the witch doctor to put a curse on their enemies. Then they believe they'll be able to defeat them. And that does perhaps not so far away as Africa. All right, two more, and we are coming near the end of this part. Another source of similar problems is what I call soulish prayers or utterances. And I'd just like to turn very quickly to James chapter 3. I am trying to make this brief, but I want to make it complete, because some of you may not have another opportunity. James chapter 3, verses 14 and 15. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. James is talking about two kinds of wisdom, and he talks about one that's not God's wisdom. And he says it has three characteristics. It's earthly. Then he says in Greek it's soulish. It's the expression of the soul, not of the spirit. And when it's that, the next thing it is demonic. And I'll tell you that there are some people who pray for you that you'd be better off without their prayers. That sounds shocking. But you see, some people, if you're a preacher, for instance, they've got their own ideas of what your ministry should be and where you should go, and they'll try to pray you there. And it may not be at all the will of God. But you have this pressure against you every time you try to do certain things.